From the Gettysburgian and 91.1 WZBT Gettysburg, I'm Jamie Welch, and this is On Target.
I'm Ben Ponce. Today on Target, we'll discuss news from the last several weeks since we last recorded, including several comings and goings on the college staff.
Then, we'll talk to student Senator Michael Mancuso about Senate campaign reform and freedom of expression. Stay with us.
All right, let's dive right back into the news. It's been a pleasant 5 weeks since we last recorded. Did you have a nice winter break, Jamie?
It was fantastic. We got a bunch of snow down in Ocean City, so that was really cool. We had over a foot of snow where I live, so that was fantastic. We never get that amount of snow.
I was going to say, I don't really associate snow with Ocean City.
Yeah, well, we had a great nor'easter come in. We had the bomb cyclone, bombogenesis, and it just all came together, and we got over a foot of snow. So that was really fun. The dog loved playing in that, and it stuck around for a while, and then it got really warm, so and then it all went away, and then it rained. And it really is sad.
Very sad. All right, let's get into the news. Right at the end of last semester, we spoke with Julie Ramsey, Dean of Students, about the ongoing search to replace Jennifer McCary, who was Associate Dean for Violence Prevention and Title IX Coordinator in the College Life Office at Gettysburg, in addition to the director of the Women's Center. So obviously she left many shoes to fill. The college was hoping to fill as many of those as they could, but in the intermittent, they had a failed search in the fall. We were not able to get a candidate in. So that means that this spring, we will be having, once again, interim Title IX coordinators. Ron Wiaffe is the Director of Student Rights and Responsibilities, will be the interim Title IX coordinator of record and be the primary intake officer for cases involving students, while Jen Lucas, co-director of HR, will serve as the intake officer for employee cases, and Jack Ryan, vice provost, and of course his most notable title, co-advisor to the Gettysburgian, will be assisting on faculty cases as he does. So the college, like I had mentioned, had hoped to bring in a candidate in the fall to replace Jennifer McCary when she left in December, but were unable to do so. So that leaves us in this spot.
Yeah, and it is very tough to hire people, during a semester. A lot of higher ed hiring happens in between semesters. So that's why we're pretty much stuck for the majority, for the entirety of the spring semester without having a dedicated Title IX coordinator. But the college has indicated to us that they think that this team is ready to hit the ground running and take care of any issues that may come up, despite there not being somebody dedicated to the role of Title IX. So we'll see how that works out as the semester progresses.
Yeah, Valentina Kakuza, not 100% sure how to say her last name, but will serve as the permanent director of the Women's Center. So they're still looking for that violence prevention Title IX hybrid to replace Jennifer. Jennifer McCary, of course, got an opportunity to return to her alma mater at Bowling Green in an expanded role as assistant vice president for student affairs and Title IX officer there. So we thank her for her service to Gettysburg, and that ends that segment. Also, right at the end of the semester, the college announced 8 new tenured faculty members. Of course, it takes, I believe, 7 years at least to get tenure at Gettysburg, and so these professors, we're all assistant professors, will be promoted to associate professor beginning next fall. And will, of course, have tenure. And those 8 faculty members are Chris Barlett from the Department of Psychology, Kathy Berenson, also from the Department of Psychology, Ryan Kearney from the Department of Biology, who you may recall just secured a $1 million grant to conduct research in the fall, McKinley Melton from the Department of English, Gary Mullen, the Department of Philosophy, Abdul Karim Saeed Ramadan from the Interdisciplinary Studies Program. He, of course, teaches Arabic. Hakeem Williams from Africana Studies, and Andy Wilson from Environmental Studies. So a big congratulations to them. And Jamie, you have some more news on the college faculty.
Yep. So last year, the college received an $800,000 grant from the Mellon Foundation to support diversity on campus and to support hiring new diverse faculty. And we found out from, again, Vice Provost and Gettysburgian Advisor Jack Ryan that those positions will not be new positions, but will actually be positions that will replace people that are retiring. These aren't new positions. They're just going to be filled by people with more diverse backgrounds. At least that is the goal of the grant. These will obviously be funded temporarily. $800,000 is not going to fund these positions forever, but it does help in supporting those new positions.
Yeah. So the key thing to note with these positions, and I actually was the one who ended up speaking to Jack about this issue, is that there is a one-year transitional period for these new faculty members, during which they'll be known as Mellon Faculty Fellows. After that 1 year is over, then they will assume positions as tenure-track assistant professors in their respective departments. And of course, as with all Mellon Foundation grantees, are all positions in the humanities. Yep. I think specifically philosophy and some of the language programs are likely to see the first of these. There will be six new members, and the emphasis is particularly on racial diversity.
Right.
And so what this program allows for is that current openings, or openings that will happen in a year, will be filled by these folks, and they will teach a 1-1 course load, meaning they'll teach one class each semester in their first year. They'll also get assistance, financial assistance in moving expenses, and some ongoing faculty mentoring and some other perks. A slightly reduced salary from what a traditional assistant professor would receive. But that's what this grant is for specifically, is to fund that 1 year transitional period for the six incoming faculty members. They've already hired one who will be starting in the fall in the Department of Philosophy, and then there will be others. Other searches are in progress. And what's also important to note is that no department is going out hiring, looking specifically for a candidate that will meet the particularly the racial diversity requirement of, or not requirement, goal of this program. But if the candidate that the department comes back for to fill an existing opening meets the criteria for this particular grant, that candidate will be offered the Mellon Faculty Fellow role. And we have funding to support six of those. So that's kind of where that goes. But to the point that you raised, Jamie, I think there was a lot of thought that these would be six permanent new positions, and that is not the case. In other hiring news, the Center for Career Development, which had been headed by Kathy Williams for a number of years, we'll have a new director beginning February the 26th. Mark Goldman will be joining Gettysburg College. He's currently the executive director of the Yeshiva University Career Center, which is in New York City. He previously worked in the Career Center at NYU, but he will be coming to Gettysburg to head up the Center for Career Development, and that will begin on February 26th. He comes highly lauded for past work, particularly focusing on technology, which I know is a focus of the strategic plan at Gettysburg. Innovation is one of those three pillars. So it will be interesting to see what happens there. We also know that Manny Ruiz, who was previously associate director of the conservatory. That's coming up. That's a future news story here. The Career Center, that Manny Ruiz will not be returning. He accepted a position at Reinhold University as assistant dean of students there. And Jim Duffy, the associate dean of college life, interim executive director of the Center for Career Development, and of course his most lauded title of co-advisor to the Gettysburgian, says that the college has not yet decided how they're going to replace Manny, or if they will, but it certainly seems likely that the Career Center will need some additional folks. Wouldn't you say, Jamie?
I think they always are in need of more people. There's a lot of students who visit the Career Center and rely on it to help them find that all-important job after they get done spending the $240,000 on an education here. It's nice to get a job to start paying down some of that student debt. So definitely very important to have lots of people working in the Center for Career Development.
And one other hiring announcement, and this is a big one. The director of the Sunderman Conservatory, Kay Hoke, announced her retirement in the beginning of the fall. The college put together a search and has hired Dr. James Day, coming to the college from the College of New Jersey, where he was assistant dean of the School of Arts and Communication. He was one of four candidates who visited campus in the fall. And he will begin in July. So this semester, Dr. Russell McCutcheon, who's the associate director of the conservatory, has also taken a position as acting director for this transitional semester. Dr. Hoke is still on the faculty until that conclusion in July. Dr. Day is a classical guitarist. And we spoke with some students during the candidate visits a few months ago, and several students had kind of raised concerns with the quality of the candidates who came to campus. But those two students specifically, Bridget Haynes and Rose Martis, both expressed optimism about Dr. Day. Rose said, quote, "I think he will bring a new perspective of service and community involvement to the conservatory." But also wondered whether he will help the conservatory, which is only 12 years old, founded in 2005. Okay, I guess that's 13 years now, after a $15 million gift from William Sunderman. Anyway, Rose wondered, will he help us find a direction to go in as a young conservatory and stick to it? Will he be able to help us recruit more talented students? But overall, she believes that he will do something positive for the conservatory. So it will be interesting to see. We spoke to Dr. Day. He seems very excited to come. And certainly, I imagine he, along with Mark Goldman from the Career Development Center, will certainly be joining us on future episodes of the podcast.
Absolutely. And the comings and goings continue. We have in the Office of Communications and Marketing, Paul Redfern, who has been with the college for 17 years and actually went here and graduated from Gettysburg College, has left his position as Executive Director of Communications and Marketing to go to St. Lawrence, where he will be serving in a new expanded role there. And Jamie Yates, who was the Director of Communications and Media Relations at Gettysburg, has stepped into his role, and there will be a national search for Jamie's vacated position.
That's correct. And on a personal note, given how closely we at times have worked with the Office of Communications, we extend our thanks to Paul for his distinguished career at Gettysburg, and our congratulations to Jamie, who has fielded our phone calls, whether she's wanted to or not, and emails over the years. So thanks to Jamie and to Paul. Before we get to Student Senate, there's one more coming and going that Jamie just reminded me of. Dave Wright, athletic director and assistant vice president for development he's an assistant vice president in addition to athletic director. He got that promotion after spearheading the Jaeger Center construction. In any case, Dave will be leaving his role as AD, which he's, I believe, held since 2002, to pursue a position as headmaster of a school in the Arkansas River Valley, I want to say is what I read.
Yeah.
But he will be on his way out, and we congratulate him on that. And I don't know if we announced on this podcast also that there's a new football coach, Kevin Burke, who was previously assistant head coach and offensive coordinator under Barry Streeter, who, of course, had a distinguished 39-year career as head coach, 42 years overall. Kevin Burke is the new head football coach. So lots and lots of comings and goings at the Berg as I guess there always are, but this seems like a lot of senior level movement right now.
In my 4 years, I don't think I've ever seen so many leaving at once. It's really a mass exodus, which, you know, you could take that whatever way you want. But it just seems that people are finding better positions at other universities. Maybe that has something to say about the mobility here at Gettysburg, that is just not there. I'm not really sure, but we definitely have lost some people that I know that I was close with and were real assets to the college. So we're sad to see them go, but we wish them luck on their future endeavors.
Indeed. So now, as I started to say, the Gettysburg College Student Senate, and we're going to just set up what we're going to interview Michael Mancuso about, will be considering approving, accepting, I suppose you could say, the Statement of Institutional Philosophy, the draft statement, which was released by Jennifer Bloomquist's committee, which was an ad hoc committee set up by Janet Morgan Riggs earlier in the fall to explore the issue of freedom of expression, to gather input from community stakeholders, and to draft this philosophy. And the philosophy tacks very closely, I believe, and we'll talk to Michael about this, it tacks very closely with the opinion that the Student Senate released. And do we have the opinion that we could pull up? I'll read it if we do. It's rather lengthy. Not the opinion, the draft statement of institutional philosophy.
Let me see if I can find it.
But in any case, I think so far the reviews that we've heard seem to be generally positive. There will be a town hall meeting coming up next week to discuss it. And here it is. Quote, "Since its inception, Gettysburg College has been engaged in the defense of freedom of expression, first through the abolitionist movement, and then with the college's involvement in the Civil War. The institution was founded in 1832 by anti-slavery theologian Samuel Simon Schmucker, and in 1837, Gettysburg College moved to Pennsylvania Hall, the construction of which was facilitated by benefactor and trustee Thaddeus Stevens. Aside from his work as a congressman and activist for universal education, Stevens was a key figure in passing the 13th Amendment, abolishing slavery. In July 1863, the college was the backdrop for the Battle of Gettysburg, and months later, alumnus David Wills was integral to the creation of the Soldiers' National Cemetery. He invited Abraham Lincoln to attend its dedication, and it was there that the president issued his call to the country to affirm equality for all in the Gettysburg Address. Our rich institutional heritage challenges us to engage in and provide leadership for addressing the critical social and political issues of our time. The college is committed to the ideal of free and open inquiry in all matters, as freedom of expression allows us to continually strive to better society and to address injustices. Freedom of expression is invaluable to the institution because it brings together multiple opinions, allows them to coalesce and or clash, and opens them to the community's reflections, analyses, and critiques. As an educational institution, we support the freedom of expression of ideas, and in our mission statement, we affirm the worth and dignity of all people and the limitless value of their intellectual potential, the commitment to a diverse and inclusive learning environment, the power of a liberal arts education to help students develop critical thinking skills, broad vision, effective communication, a sense of the interrelatedness of all knowledge, sensitivity to the human condition, and a global perspective, the value of a lifelong commitment to service, the value of ethical leadership that is inclusive, collaborative, and directed towards effecting change for the greater good, and our conviction that a residential college best promotes the sense of community central to a liberal arts education in which personal relationships between students, faculty, and staff can flourish. The college recognizes that some ideas will be viewed as offensive and disagreeable by some, perhaps even most, members of the community. However, it is not the role of the college to shield individuals from ideas and opinions they find unwelcome, disagreeable, uncivil, or even deeply offensive. Rather, we encourage members of the college community to act according to the principle that the best response to ideas that they find offensive is speech, not censorship. Participating in a community where there is a diverse range of opinions, perspectives, and experiences is rewarding for all of our members, and the college is committed to nurturing and celebrating this experience. We expect that diverse views and opinions will create conflict and disagreement among us at times, but the genuine sharing of ideas, perspectives, and values presupposes both freedom and responsibility. Consequently, we expect all members of the community to engage in civil discourse, reasoned thought, sustained discussion, and constructive participation. The freedom to express ideas, exchange views, and engage in protest is essential to the life of the college. The college encourages its members to make independent judgments about the worth and validity of ideas and to contest ideas with which they disagree. Any effort by members of the college community to limit openness in this academic community is a matter of serious concern and hinders the freedom of expression and the discovery of truth. All members of the community are therefore free to express their points of view on or opposition to any issue of public interest within reasonable restrictions of time, place, and manner. Each member of the community is also expected to encourage and facilitate the ability of other community members to express themselves freely. No group or individual has the right to interfere with the legitimate activity of other authorized persons and groups, as interference with expression compromises the college's goal of creating an environment where issues can be openly discussed. The freedom to debate and discuss the merits of competing ideas does not, of course, mean that individuals may say whatever they wish, wherever they wish. We have obligations to protect the dignity and security of all members of the college community from those who would seek to use speech primarily to deprive others of their freedom to learn, their freedom to contribute, and their freedom to participate in our community. Thus, the college may seek to restrict expression that, 1, violates state or federal law or college policies on non-discrimination, 2, constitutes slander, threats, or harassment, 3, unreasonably invades individual privacy or violates confidentiality interests, or 4, is directly incompatible with the functioning of the college. In addition, the college may reasonably regulate the time, place, and manner of expression to ensure that it does not disrupt the ordinary activities of the college. However, these are limited exceptions to the general principle of freedom of expression, and it is vitally important that these exceptions not be used in a manner that is inconsistent with the college's ideals relating to the free and open expression of ideas. Gettysburg College's philosophy of freedom of expression reflects our commitment to sustain a community in which all members feel that their ideas, opinions, and beliefs are respected and protected, even when those ideas are not shared universally. We believe the free expression of ideas is a cornerstone of the learning process, and it is only through exposure to new concepts, opposing views, and challenging topics that one truly grows in an academic setting. Preventing the free exchange of ideas restricts the generation of knowledge and the ability to discern between what is right and what is wrong. In this sense, Gettysburg College subscribes to the wisdom in the words of Justice Brandeis, quote, "If there be time to expose through discussion the falsehood and fallacies, to avert the evil by the processes of education, the remedy to be applied is more speech, not enforced silence." Whitney v. California, 1927. Sections of this philosophy have been adapted from similar documents produced by the University of Chicago and Franklin and Marshall College.
You really got to hand it to this committee for really creating a nice, brief, and succinct policy that we can all wrap our heads around and understand fully what's going on. They really knocked out of the park on that one.
Well, certainly. That was pretty lengthy. And you're probably tired of hearing the sound of my voice. And don't worry, I was tired of the sound of it by the time I finished reading. It is quite a lengthy statement, although I do think that they did make a concerted effort to incorporate the input they received from across the campus community. And there will be a town hall upcoming, and we'll also discuss that with Michael Mancuso.
Well, that wraps up our news segment, and now I believe it's time for Ben Ponce with the ever-favorite Bullet Report.
We've got lots of sports scores since the last time we recorded, but we're only going to do those from 2018. Starting on January 3rd, the men's basketball team lost to Scranton 63-54. The men's wrestling team finished 9th out of 9 at the Washington and Lee Jim Kreitzer Invitational. The men's basketball team lost on January 6th, 69-61 to Swarthmore, number 12 in the country. The wrestling team finished 5th out of 16 at the Waynesburg Invitational on January 6th. The women's basketball team defeated Swarthmore 83-38, also on January the 6th. On January the 9th, the women's basketball team fell to Haverford 67-56, while the men's basketball team defeated Haverford 89-73. The men's basketball team lost to Muhlenberg 74-67 on January 11th. The wrestling team lost to Oneonta 24-18. also on January 11th. On January 11th, the women's basketball team defeated Muhlenberg 67-62. The wrestling team on January the 13th defeated Penn College 41-6, but also defeated King's College in Pennsylvania 33-6. The women's basketball team on January the 14th defeated Ursinus 64-59. The men's basketball team, however, lost 63-50 that same day. The women's basketball team on January the 17th defeated McDaniel 66-53, while the men lost 50-46. The wrestling team lost 29-19 to Elizabethtown. The men's basketball team defeated Washington College 68-53 on January the 20th. The wrestling team lost to Stevens 25-21 on January 20th. The wrestling team did not wrestle against the United States Merchant Marine Academy on January the 20th due to a government shutdown. Thank you, Congress. And the women's basketball team defeated Washington College 68-45 on January the 20th. Thus endeth the bullet report.
In prime form, as always, you didn't lose any of your skill over break. Thanks so much for that, Ben. And we'll be right back after this with Mike Mancuso.
And we're joined today by Michael Mancuso, chair of the Opinions Committee in the Gettysburg College Student Senate and a senator himself representing the class 2019. Michael, thanks for joining us.
It's good to be here, Ben.
So I want to start by discussing freedom of expression and specifically the draft statement of institutional philosophy that was released, I guess, last week to the campus community. By the time this airs, it may have been earlier this month. You've been critical both of the process that was used to draft the statement and of the composition of the committee. In October, you said, quote, "The administration has a history of making decisions and asking Student Senate about it afterwards. I hope this time is different. Also, their rationale for choosing Pat McKenna, who is the student representative on the committee, is flawed. While Pat is certainly interested in matters of policy and is undoubtedly competent, it cannot be said that he is representative of students as a whole," end quote. Subsequently, you spearheaded a process in the Senate Opinions Committee to draft an opinion that the body ultimately approved, that in effect suggested Gettysburg should adopt only restrictions on freedom of expression that a public institution would adopt, meaning only Supreme Court jurisprudence would be used to restrict freedom of expression. The opinion also distinguishes between the rights of students and the rights of outside speakers brought to campus, but it ultimately argues for the protection of the right to bring speakers who would promulgate offensive speech or even hate speech. First of all, would you say that's a fair summary of the opinion your committee passed?
That is pretty fair. I wouldn't quite agree that I would say hate speech. That does have a lot of definitions, but I would say that might have been not quite involved. I would say offensive speech was definitely something that we thought doesn't need to be banned. Hate speech, though, which has, I think, more of a violent and more of a insidious connotation to it, was something that wasn't quite something we were hoping would be brought onto campus. But I can say, as a whole, I'm very, very happy with how this whole process went. I'm very happy to say that the administration proved me wrong, that this was not an instance of them soliciting input after they made a decision. This was something that, you know, Student Senate was able to voice its opinion about and was able to have influence on that. And I'm very happy with how the philosophy came out. I have to say that I am in fully support of this opinion that they released. It does a lot to protect our right to freedom of expression and to promote, you know, education on Gettysburg campus.
Yeah, just to clarify, the opinion that the committee passed says a recognized student group may bring or invite a speaker onto campus who espouses unpopular or hateful opinions. So that's where, I mean, I don't know, that I guess that doesn't explicitly say hate speech, which you're right, does have some federal definitions and other definitions, mm-hmm. but does say espouses unpopular or hateful opinions. With that, you just mentioned that you do support the draft statement of institutional philosophy that the Committee of Seven released. In light of that, do you still stand behind your previous criticism of the committee and the college for how it worked to draft the statement in terms of process? Do you still think there were room for improvement there? Or in hindsight, you know, do you think your previous criticisms were maybe unfounded?
Well, I have to say, and this is nitpicking here, I would have preferred a student representative who was elected somehow by the student senate or the student body, that as opposed to someone appointed. That being said, the whole process turned out so well, the expression, or the philosophy, I should say, came out so well that I'm definitely willing to abandon those criticisms.
Mm-hmm. And so moving forward, we've spoken to Jennifer Bloomquist, associate provost for a lot of things, and who was the chair of the committee. And she said, she's the associate provost and dean of interdisciplinary and social science and interdisciplinary programs. And I think I still missed something. She has a rather long and impressive title, but that's not really the point. She's the chair of the committee that drafted the statement. And she said that after the comment period is over for the draft statement, and there will be a campus-wide town hall next Thursday, February the 1st, at, I believe, 11:30 a.m. in the Cub Ballroom. We'll check those dates and times. But after that town hall and after there's a comment period, she said she plans to submit the opinion first to Student Senate for a vote. If Senate approves, it will go to faculty. And if faculty approves, then it will go to the Board of Trustees. Do you support this process? And when it comes to Senate, do you plan to vote in favor of the opinion?
Yes, I'd say I do support this process. You know, going to students first, then to faculty, then to the trustees, I think it really does show that they want our input. You know, once something has gone to faculty and trustees, it's kind of a done deal. But the fact that if they're going to students first, then, you know, students have that opportunity to weigh in. And I do plan to vote for this. I'm going to be very proud to cast my vote for this. I think this is the type, this is a philosophy I believe in.
Do you anticipate that it will pass?
I do. As I understand it, it has a lot of support on the executive board. And I would imagine, given that it very closely follows the opinion that Senate passed, that it will pass Senate almost unanimously.
Yeah, I did notice it does seem to tack very closely to the opinion that the Senate passed.
And I have to say, I'm very proud that, you know, Senate was able to weigh in on this. I think that a lot of students see Senate as an institution that doesn't do much for students on campus, and that this is an example of Senate working for the student body, of Senate actually advocating for on behalf of the student body and affecting change for the student body. So I'm very happy to see that has finally happened.
So we want to get your take on a report that was produced by a committee that Senate Vice President Amy Bosman led, mm-hmm. That outlines proposed changes to the composition and election process of student Senate. First of all, is it safe to say that you're familiar with the report?
I reviewed the report only once at the end of last semester, so I'm definitely superficially familiar with it, but there might be minor details I couldn't quite recall.
So we've obtained a copy of the report, and it outlines four primary problems with the composition and election process for Senate, which are first, low voter turnout, second, low interest in students running for positions, and third, too many open positions for the number of interested people, and an imbalance in interest across class years, mm-hmm. and also club representatives wanting to vote for items, which has been a consistent point of contention between club reps and Senate as a whole. As a senator yourself, do you believe that each of these four issues are real and worthy of concern?
No, I would definitely agree with that, especially the one about differing interest across class years. You know, we have, you know, a lot of first years will come out, a lot of sophomores, and then junior and seniors almost non-existent in their participation in Senate. We have a lot of senators who are appointed every year because of that. And I think that the other problem areas that were highlighted with low voter turnout also continue to be a issue, but I would credit Vice President Amy Bosman that this year we had very high or higher voter turnout than we had in previous years due to some changes she made in how the elections were held.
So with respect to that low voter turnout and voters not being informed on who they're voting for, the committee recommended that there will be a question and answer session for all students applying for executive board positions at the last Senate meeting in March. If one of the problems is lack of knowledge about Senate, do you believe such a form at a Senate meeting is a viable solution? And what other measures would you support to address this particular issue?
Well, I'm not quite sure that format, that question and answer session, is necessarily designed to be attacking that specific part of low voter interest. I think what that's meant to do is something we haven't really had previously is an open forum where if someone wanted to question all the candidates, that they could. So this is really just a way of providing greater access. I know also this gives opportunity, I think, mostly to the press, agencies on campus, GNN, the Gettysburgian, WZBT. And I think this will help give them access to a kind of candidate forum that we didn't have previously.
And we also want to talk about what we think is the other big idea that came out of the report from this committee, which is a proposed restructuring of Senate to reduce the number of senators elected by each class down to four, add seven senators at large, and then create what the proposal calls affinity groups, which are seven groups from various categories, including academic, political, religious, service, social, arts and music, and cultural, which each would have one voting representative elected by the clubs. What's your take on that issue?
Well, I definitely I'm very happy to hear that they're, you know, reducing the number of senators per class year. I can say personally, I've been elected unopposed for 3 years. That doesn't make for good democracy. That doesn't make for, you know, a good government. That doesn't make for good government, really. So reducing that number so we can have competitive elections that are really between good candidates. Also, I love the idea of the affinity groups. I definitely will be interested to see how that pans out. I think it could get a little dicey when we're dividing these clubs that will oftentimes go across a variety of issues. You know, dividing them into groups may be a little difficult, and I'm sure the final form of that may change slightly by the time we've gotten to the actual ratification of this. But I think that allowing clubs to have a greater voice in Senate, allowing them to have a greater impact in Senate, I think that's a great idea.
So those clubs that do have sort of an intersectionality between different affinity groups, how do you think that the conflict should be resolved? Do you think that the clubs should select what affinity group they're a part of? Do you think that that's something that, say, the club's liaison or the student activities and Greek life office, which manages club registrations, would handle? How do you foresee that particular conflict being resolved?
Well, it would definitely be handled within Senate. I don't think we would bring OSAGL into that, just because I think Senate likes to handle especially things regarding to its own structure in-house. You know, that it's kind of our right to decide that. I couldn't quite give you a good answer right now, because I think that there's still more thought and debate to be had about that. I would say I do like the idea of clubs maybe signing up for the affinity group they would like to be in. But again, a lot of this remains to be seen. A lot of this is still being debated. But I definitely do like some of the suggestions you recommended.
And do you just believe in general that clubs are underrepresented as it stands right now in Senate?
I think underrepresented is the wrong word, but I think that they don't have enough of a voice in Senate. I think a lot of club reps see their job as a chore, that they have to sit there and stay here, and that they don't feel like they're valued beyond that. I think that by giving them a formal vote in this process, or a formal way that they can register how they feel in the Senate, that this will make them more excited to do their job and make them more active parts of Senate.
So you think that this proposal, these proposed changes, including the affinity groups, addresses those concerns and will, you know, help to appease some of the club's concerns that they've had?
Yeah, I definitely hope it will. I definitely hope it will. And I definitely am looking forward to hearing from clubs about this and hearing what they want and ways they might tweak the system to make it better for them.
So just in terms of timing around this, I can state that the Senate Policy Committee is meeting, I guess, almost as we speak, to start discussing some specific language, legislative language, I guess you could say, as I believe this particular item is on the agenda to discuss. I'm sure that we won't be passing anything in the coming Senate meetings. Is there anything in the report that you have concerns with, red flags with, that you recall?
You know, not off the top of my head, but like I said, it's been a while since I read it. I only saw it very briefly. That being said, I'm fairly confident. We really get into the nitty-gritty when we're in policy committee trying to find out little details, seeing maybe, will this part of the Constitution affect or conflict with another. So I'm sure anything like that would be ironed out by the time it makes it to the floor of the Senate.
Mm-hmm. So switching gears one more time, I would say it's fair to say that your ambition as a student senator is well known to folks who watch that group closely. You ran for president last year and ended up losing to Luke Frigon, who currently serves in that role. And it was a part of your urging, I believe, that this opinions committee that you chair sort of came to be. So what plans do you have for your own participation in Senate moving forward? And do you plan to run for president again later this spring?
Well, I can definitely say that I definitely do have some plans to run for president. It's definitely something I'm interested in. and I would love to pursue that again. And as far as my own committee, the Opinions Committee, what I love about this committee is that we're the committee that is taking issues to the administration. We're the issue that is really going to bat for the student body. So, you know, we did that with the freedom of expression policy. We did that not through a formal opinion, but just through when it came to CUB tables. A lot of students were upset that CUB tables were not as effective as they used to be, as CUB has less traffic with the construction going on. So, you know, I got to meet with Cindy Wright, the leader of Campus Rec, and as well as I can't remember her name from OSAGL, but and to talk about having CUB tables in the Jaeger Center, and that was something that we got to push for, and I believe is something that is planned to start this semester. So, you know, it's little things like that, and also big things like freedom of expression that we get to do. We also have some other items on our agenda for this semester. One of them was I was contacted by a student named Kara Stein over break, who presented to me research she had done in a class that talked about neurodivergent students on campus, or students who might have more difficulties with learning than some other students on campus might, and ways that Gettysburg College isn't doing as much as it could be supporting these students. And you know, she asked that my committee would work with her and work with these students to present a plan to the Gettysburg College administration for better ways they could be supporting these students on campus. So I'm really looking forward to doing that. My committees will be meeting next week to talk about that and look into this in more detail.
What kinds of things, you know, would be on the table? I mean, obviously, mm-hmm. you still need to meet on those, but what sorts of, you know, in broad strokes, as you understand it, what is the nature of this issue mm-hmm. and what are some possible steps that could be under consideration?
Yeah. So some of the steps that I recall from reading her research was one of the simple things, like posting the syllabus much earlier. So this will allow students who have trouble learning or learning disabilities to, you know, have the syllabus ahead of time and, you know, plan out their semester better and, you know, look for alternatives and, you know, plan for any hiccups that might come along the way. There's other things and much more broader plans, like, you know, maybe restructuring the Department of Academic Advising, which would obviously be a huge thing to take on, and I'm not quite sure if that would happen or if that's something my committee will push for, but it's definitely something we would like to look into because, you know, we want to make sure that all the students on our campus are getting equal access to this education, and we want to make sure that that happens.
Mm-hmm. Are there other issues that the Opinions Committee plans to undertake this semester?
Yeah, so this is something that, you know, is personally something I've been passionate about for a while and just finally started to look and really take steps towards accomplishing it last semester. And this is kind of an out-of-the-way issue, which is the issue of the Quarry Pond. And I don't know, Ben, you're laughing, so maybe you've heard me talk about this before.
Someone told me that you might try and bring this conversation around to pond scum. So,
oh my God.
So here we are. I didn't know how you were going to do it, but I guess I kind of set you up for
you
that.
You really did tee it up, Ben.
Set it up perfectly, Ben.
Right out of the park.
So tell me about pond scum, Michael.
The Quarry Pond is actually one of my favorite places on campus. You know, I come from a rural area. I've always grown up fishing, and it's a place I always love to go walk by and just kind of sit and think. It's a really peaceful spot. One of the issues that the pond suffers from is overpopulation of Canadian geese. The Canadian geese are very well known for the effects they have on small ponds. Their feces will litter the banks and just kind of ruin the pond. It causes imbalances in the chemicals in the pond, and it also will lead to higher levels of harmful bacteria such as E. coli in the pond. I did some research about it and ways to reduce that goose population. And the easiest way to do that is by planting what's called a riparian buffer, which is just trees and shrubs along the bank of the pond that will make the pond a less attractive habitat to the geese. The geese want to be able to sit in the field and look at the water and knowing that that's a place they can escape from if they see predators. But if you create a screen between the geese and the pond, they're less likely to be there. It makes it a less attractive habitat while at the same time improving the water quality of the pond and creating a more natural setting along its banks. In order to do this, I met with had a preliminary meeting with the grounds manager. And, you know, so I look forward to try working with him on this issue. And I also met with Professor Andy Wilson, the environmental studies professor. And I hope to work with both of them, as well as the Opinions Committee and Student Senate, to really make this a reality, to make this a spot on campus where students can enjoy just, you know, being outdoors in nature and also, you know, make it a better water quality for fishing and other student activities that would go on.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's certainly when someone said that you wanted to bring it around to pond scum, I had no idea that that's where
not
we
really
were headed.
Pond scum,
I suppose,
but
not so much, but the quarry pond. So, I mean, I guess more broadly, you mentioned earlier that you are interested in running once again for Senate president. What would you say, what changes would you say you would seek to make to the body? What would make you a good student Senate president?
Well, one thing I would definitely like to do is, and this is a simple thing, is create a website for the Student Senate. So the Student Senate currently uses the website that is that this college gives it. And the problem is that only one member of the executive board has access to that website. It can kind of be a bit of a hassle to update it. And if you go onto that website now, you'll find information that might be 5 or 6 years old. If the Senate were to have its own website, we would have a much easier time updating that information, keeping it relevant to the student body, and making it a better resource for our day-to-day operations. Another thing that I think I would bring to it is, you know, I have a pretty robust knowledge of the rules of order, and I could, you know, I would hope to make use that knowledge to make debate as efficient as possible. A lot of times, Senate will drag on a little bit longer than it needs to, and it's done this for the 3 years I've been in it, drag on a little bit longer than it needs to because discussion and debate is getting a little confusing, a little out of hand. But, you know, by sticking to those rules and by using them not as an impediment but as a means of making it more efficient, the meetings will go quicker and people can be more engaged.
Mm-hmm. So are there pressing issues or problems that you see in Senate now, things that, you know, aren't currently being addressed beyond the website issue that you think should be addressed and that would be part of your candidacy?
Well, I definitely think that, and, you know, and this is something that we have started to work on within the last, I would say, two semesters, which is really taking to heart our slogan of Senate works for you. I think that we keep making strides in that direction of being that Senate that's working for the student body. And I think that I would, you know, continue to do what I've done in the Opinions Committee, and I would be able to, as president, you know, do more work to intercede for the student body with the administration and faculty.
All right. Well, Michael Mancuso, thanks so much for joining us. Great to have you on.
Good to be here.
That's On Target for this week. We'd like to thank Student Senator Michael Mancuso for being our featured guest today.
We'd also like to thank the staff of the Gettysburg Virgin, as well as the executive board of WZBT for their support of this project. Be sure to subscribe to our podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, Google Play, or wherever else you get your podcasts, as long as it's one of the correct places that actually has On Target.
On Target is a joint production of the Gettysburg Virgin and WZBT. Our theme music was composed by Diego Rocha, of the class of 2019, who was a music major focusing on composition from the Sunderman Conservatory of Music.